वाणी गुणान कथने श्रवणौ कथायां हस्तौ च कर्मसु मनस्तव पादयोर्नः स्मृत्यां शिरस्तव निवास जगत् प्रणामे दृष्टिस्सतां दर्शनेस्तु भवत्तनूनाम्। I pray to you, O Lord, that my speech be always devoted to the narration of thy excellence, my ears to the hearing of thy wonderful glory, our hands to the performance of thy work, our mind to the meditation on thy holy feet, and our head to bowing to the whole world, seeing your presence everywhere, thy abode. May our eyes be devoted to seeing the righteousness which is thy body, the righteous people, devotees who constitute thy body. May my mind and sense organs all be always in connection with you. That is my prayer. Please grant this prayer. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om peace. Peace be within us all. Peace and harmony be amongst all beings. And peace be everywhere in nature. Last time we were studying the sixth instruction of Sri Rama to Shabari. The sixth instruction has three parts in it. The first part is leading a virtuous life, punya shilatvam. Virtue may be defined as something that is right and helpful to one and all, and does not cause any harm to anyone, including oneself. So under this heading, virtuous life, we studied three things given in the Bhagavad Gita: yajna, dana, tapas, sacrifice, charity and austerity. Today we shall study the second part of the sixth instruction, practice of yama and niyama. This topic is familiar to most of you, as many of you have studied this Patanjali Yoga Sutras, Yoga Aphorisms of Patanjali, where these are the first two steps of the eight steps, yama and niyama. They form the foundation, the basis for all spiritual practice, no matter which path we follow. Even for those who worship the formless, meditate on the formless, attributeless reality, these are basic disciplines. These are the fundamentals of spiritual life, yama and niyama. These are described in the second chapter of Patanjali's Yoga Aphorisms. The eight steps of Patanjali, as you recall, of Raja Yoga, also described in Swamiji's book on Raja Yoga, the eight steps are yama, niyama, first two steps. Yama are moral rules, niyama are spiritual disciplines. Third step is asana, perfection of posture for meditation. Fourth step of Patanjali is pranayama, controlling the breath, which is a means to control the mind. The mind and breath, prana, are connected. If you control the one, the other will be under control. So we can start controlling the mind and breathing will be automatically be regulated. But it is easier to control the breath than to control the mind. So when you control the breath, then mind also will become calm. So pranayama is emphasized as the fourth step. Pratyahara is detachment of the mind and sense organs from all external objects and activities, at least some part of the time. Dharana is practicing concentration by withdrawing the mind from all worldly thoughts. Seventh step is dhyanam, practice of meditation, focusing the mind on one topic without any break or interruption of intruding thoughts. The eighth and last step is the culmination, samadhi, total absorption in the object of meditation, which is usually the ultimate reality. Now we study in the instruction that Sri Ramachandra gave to Shabari. He has mentioned Yama and Niyama. If you practice Yama and Niyama, then you can practice any spiritual path. They are the foundation steps. So Sri Ramachandra said, Yamadi Niyamadi cha. Each of these, Yama, moral rules, Niyama, spiritual disciplines, has five subdivisions, making a total of 10 disciplines. This can be called the 10 commandments of Patanjali. The 10 basic rules which all spiritual aspirants have to practice without exception. And even those who seek success and peace of mind, success in worldly life and peace of mind, they also should practice Yama and Niyama. The five rules of Yama are, first is Ahimsa, non-injury through body, mind and speech. Satyam, truthfulness. Asteya, not stealing, not hoarding or not wasting. Brahmacharya, celibacy, different rules at different stages of life. Last one is Aparigraha, not receiving gifts. The only exception being those mendicants who live, subsist only on bhiksha, on begging, they can accept only one meal at a time. Himsa is a question. When we discuss ahimsa, non-injury, many people have the question, why did Sri Krishna ask Arjuna to fight them if you have to practice non-injury? Non-injury does not mean we should bow down to evil. The Pandavas, Arjuna, under the leadership of Sri Krishna, had exhausted all methods of negotiation. Every possible step they had taken to prevent war, nobody wanted war. But Duryodhana was bent upon killing the Pandavas. He didn't even want to give them 5 villages for the 5 brothers and keep the rest of the kingdom. He said, I can't give you even a space equivalent to the tip of a needle. Not only that, when he drove them to the forest, then there also he tried so many times to kill them. He didn't want them. So the sheer self-defense, they had to resort to the last step, namely danda, namely use of force. But that does not mean that we should always use force. We have to practice ahimsa. The other exception is when a law enforcement officer uses force, minimum force, only when required, if required, that is allowed to protect the society and to prevent the evildoer from committing more evils and causing more harm to oneself and to society. Under that circumstance, use of force to the minimum extent, if necessary at all, is permitted in the larger interest of saving, protecting the society and the individual. Other than that, we have to practice ahimsa by thought, word and deed. That is ahimsa, non-injury. With thought, word and deed, it is also possible to cause himsa, injury, by harsh speech, by insulting somebody. That also causes pain, himsa, to the other person. Need not be only a physical injury. So we should not cause pain in any way to any being, even to animals and plants, and also to the whole of nature. It is possible to cause damage to nature by putting litter everywhere, polluting the air and water, releasing effluents into the water streams, killing, poaching animals, instead of protecting them, unnecessarily killing trees. All these things are himsa against nature. We should not do that. Even noise pollution is a kind of disturbance in nature. Too much noise, too loud music, disturbing everybody's sleep in the neighborhood. All that is himsa, injury. We don't see it that way. So we have to be careful not to cause even the slightest harm, pain or injury or loss or damage to any being, any creature, including the whole of nature. That is the vast scope of practicing ahimsa. Then the second discipline in Yama is truthfulness. No deviation is allowed in the practice of truthfulness. Every time we bring up this topic of truthfulness, one person in the audience always comes up with the question, why did Yudhishthira say Dharmaraju Ashwatthamo Hatah Kunjara? That's the only thing they remember from Mahabharata, has 100,000 shlokas in it. And about 35% of Mahabharata is all about Dharma Shastra, the science of righteousness, values, right? They neglect all of that. This one instance, they always, everybody in every audience I have addressed, had the humble opportunity to address, they bring up this topic. It was designed on a battlefield. Otherwise, and he technically spoke the truth, Ashwatthama Hatah Kunjaraha. Kunjara means an elephant. An elephant named Ashwatthama was killed. He made an announcement, public announcement in the battlefield. But Ashwatthama's father, he misunderstood that his son had been killed, and he kept down his weapons and the war continued. That we cannot all, we are not always in the battlefield fighting for our lives. In our lives, we have to practice truthfulness. Sri Ramakrishna, among his instructions in the gospel, emphasized truthfulness more than anything else. At least in 6 to 8 places in his teachings in the gospel, Sri Ramakrishna has repeatedly said that truthfulness is a tapasya, austerity for this age, by thought, speech, and action. Swami Vivekananda, commenting on this truthfulness, satyam, in his Raja Yoga, has written like this. When this power of truth will be established with you, then even in dream you will never tell an untruth. You will be true in thought, word, and deed. Whatever you say will be truth. You may say to a man, be blessed, and that man will be blessed. If a man is diseased, and you say to him, be thou cured, he will be cured immediately. This is the power of blessings of holy people. In the Upanishad, we are exhorted to seek holy company, the blessings of holy people, because they have observed truthfulness all their lives, and whatever they say will materialize. In our case, our speech has to conform to the fact. In their case, fact will conform to the speech. If they say, may it be so, tathastu, it will happen. Therefore, among other reasons, one reason why we have to seek holy company is to seek their blessings for our spiritual well-being, spiritual life. If they say, may you be illumined, see, as Sri Ramakrishna said, may you be illumined. Chaitanya ho, on January 1st, 1886, everybody became illumined. The words of a holy person who has practiced truthfulness can never be wrong. It has to become the fact. This is what Patanjali said in the aphorism, Satya Pratishthayam Kriya Phalashrayatvat. Commenting on that one, Swamiji says, when this power of truth will be established with you, then even in dream you will never tell an untruth. You will be true in thought, word, and deed. Whatever you say will be truth. You may say to a man, be blessed, and that man will be blessed. If a man is diseased and you say to him, be thou cured, he will be cured immediately. Ahimsa Satya. Third discipline is Asteya. Asteya means literally not stealing. Most people don't care about stealing other people's property. It also has a subtle aspect to it. When we, supposing I'm working for an employer in an office, and I'm supposed to work a certain number of hours every day for which I am paid. And if I use half hour of that office time for personal work, then it's subtle, in a subtle way I am stealing. So we don't look at it that way. Use the office computer to check personal email or play Sudoku or something. When I am supposed to be doing the office work for which I am paid, then is it not a kind of stealing? So stealing does not mean always breaking into somebody's house and burglarizing somebody. That is the grossest form of stealing. But in subtle ways also, plagiarism, copying somebody's idea and passing it as one's own, these are all instances of stealing, we should be careful about that. Asteya, not in any subtle way, not wasting, not hoarding. If you waste anything, food, paper, time, etc., we are taking away that from availability to other people or ourselves. So many people need those things, and if we waste all these things because we have so much, then we are depriving them of that access to that resource. Especially time. If I waste 5 minutes of my life, then I'm stealing from my own limited amount of time. The bank, the clock is ticking from the moment I was born. And the deadline is already fixed. It can't be changed. You can't postpone it. And within that time, if I don't use it properly, if I waste it, I'm stealing from my own bank account of time. Time is one resource which never be wasted. Other things we probably sometimes we can regenerate. Does not mean we should waste paper and food, because we can grow them, manufacture paper. But time, if we lose, if we waste, it can never be regenerated. It's only one totally non-renewable resource. Shankaracharya says, pratyayanti gata punarna divasah kalo jagat bhakshaka gata divasah punahana pratyayanti. Those days, hours, weeks, hours and moments, gata which have passed, they will never come back. Once for all, it is away, it is expended. Therefore, wasting should not be done of any material. The fourth one, discipline, ahimsa, satya, asteya, is brahmacharya. This is celibacy or continence. In the book, Meditation and Spiritual Life, by Swami Yatishwarananda, he has given detailed instructions on how brahmacharya should be practiced by people in different stages of their life. The broader meaning of brahmacharya is, charya means conduct. That lifestyle, that conduct, which ultimately conduces to the realization of Brahman, ultimate reality, knowledge of God. Every aspect of life is included in brahmacharya. But specifically, it means celibacy or continence. So here, what Patanjali says, brahmacharya pratishthaya viryalabha, enormous energy will come when a person practices strict celibacy. Look at the enormous energy Swami Vivekananda had, all the disciples of Sri Ramakrishna had, all the great sages had. How much from, they had, didn't have much high quality food or nutritious food or anything, no supplement, vitamins, nothing. Whatever came by chance, food, what chance may bring, well cooked or ill judged not, that's what they ate. But look at the tremendous energy they had. How did it come? How did so much strength Hanuman had come? Because of his celibacy. Hanuman is a supreme example of purity. Celibacy means purity of conduct by thought, word and deed. It, that purity, that devotion gave Hanuman unimaginable strength, enormous amount of strength to cross over the ocean to find where Sita was and to build the bridge and take the whole Rama's army to Sri Lanka side. And we know the Ramayana story. So commenting on this, benefit of practicing brahmacharya, celibacy, Swami Vivekananda writes like this in the Raja Yoga book. The chaste brain has tremendous energy and gigantic willpower. Without chastity, there can be no spiritual strength. Continence gives wonderful control over mankind. The spiritual leaders of men have been very continent, and this is what gave them power. Therefore, the yogi must be continent, practice celibacy. The fifth discipline of Yama, ahimsa, non-injury, satya, truthfulness, asteya, not stealing, brahmacharya, purity of conduct, celibacy, continence. And last one is aparigraha. Aparigraha means not accepting gifts. Asteya means not stealing. Aparigraha means not accepting gifts. Wandering monks who have renounced everything can accept food for one meal at a time, not storing for the next meal. Shankaracharya says, describing the lifestyle of a wandering monk, Parivrajaka, Karatala Bhiksha Tarutala Vasaha. Karatala means whatever amount of food you can hold in the hand, a handful of food like this, no more. That is enough to fill the stomach. Once eat that food, there you have no choice. You can, if you go back food from somebody, you cannot say, give me this sweet, give me this rasagulla, give me this pickle. You can't say, whatever falls into your hand, that is the food for the day. Kartala Bhiksha, no storing for the evening meal. Eat it, finish it, wash your hands in the stream, and then go and sit down under a tree and meditate. Tarutala Vasas, living under the tree. Storage means you are providing for the future. We are not totally dependent on the will of God. He will provide. The Lord is my shepherd, and I shall not want. A famous psalm in the book of Psalms, 23rd chapter. When I have so much faith in the Lord, and He has promised that whatever I need, He will provide if I am devoted to Him, then why should I worry about future? Where is the room for anxiety? Anxiety and the need to provide for future, building all kinds of safety nets, that is good for householders to some extent. They have to do those things, necessary. But not for those who are practicing a strict spiritual life. So that is the Swamiji's comment on aparigraha. Swami Vivekananda explains, the mind of the man who receives gifts is acted on by the mind of the giver. So the receiver is likely to become degenerated. Receiving gifts is prone to destroy the independence of the mind and make us slavish. Therefore, we receive no gifts. If you receive gift from somebody, that means the giver's frame of mind has a subtle influence on our mind. So we have to be careful about receiving gifts. I have a friend, not here, in some other state. She's a physician, ER physician. And, you know, they work in the hospitals, a lot of colleagues, nurses and technicians and other doctors, everybody. Christmas time, there is a frenzy of gift giving. Nowadays, everybody has everything, but you have to give something. Otherwise, you are not considered in. You are out of touch, out of whack or whatever they call. So you have to give something. And one day she made a rule. She had two children, husband, mother-in-law, serving everybody, going to work, working full time. She said, I will not receive any gift for Christmas or any birthday or any occasion, and I will not give any gift to anybody. She told her children, husband, they agreed, mom, it's okay. Mother-in-law didn't have any demand for gifts, wish, need for gifts. But colleagues had difficulty accepting that. They said, this is not the norm. We have to, Christmas time, we have to give a gift. But she said, I have everything. I don't need anything. And most of you have everything. And simply giving gift because it is a formality you have to go through. Commercial exploitation and this gift giving. Now, Valentine's Day is coming, and Mother's Day comes, and Father's Day comes, and some other day comes, and Christmas and birthday. All this gift giving, most of it is unnecessary. If there is a necessity, you give something to fulfill somebody's need, then you can give. Simply accepting gifts is not a good practice. First year, her colleagues didn't accept it very easily. They were looking at her, why is she so strange? Why is she not accepting or giving gifts? That's a normal thing to do during Christmas time. But after 1 year, they all understood how such a wise decision it was. There is no need for all these things. Much of it is simply frenzy, drummed up by the merchants, the commercial people. So many number of days left for Christmas shopping, 9 days left for Christmas. Every day, the special sales announcements and commercials, a lot of this frenzy is built up. There is no need for all of this. If there is a basic necessity for somebody, you give. You give the gift of love. You give the gift of friendship. You serve the needy people, the poor people. That is different. That's for our spiritual benefit. As Swamiji says, when you give something to somebody in charity, is not primarily to help that person, it is for our spiritual benefit, to practice unselfishness thereby. We grow spiritually when we do something good for others, but with humility, not with pride standing on a pedestal, as Swamiji says. But humility, with gratitude we have to give something to somebody. Need not be always money. It can be giving a ride to somebody. It can be taking a meal to somebody who cannot cook. It can be bringing medicine for somebody. Something like that. A small thing. But it is necessary for that person. That kind of gift giving is all right. Acceptance is also all right. But all these things that go on in the name of gift giving during Christmas, birthdays, etc., all of that, much of it can be cut down. Then, after giving these five rules, Patanjali says that these five rules, non-injury, truthfulness, not stealing, continuing celibacy, purity of conduct, and not accepting gifts, ahimsa, satyasthaya, brahmacharya, aparigraha, these five rules, they call it Mahavrata, great vows. These are the greatest disciplines, foundation disciplines we all have to follow. Patanjali then says that these five rules, namely ahimsa, satyasthaya, brahmacharya, aparigraha, are of universal and eternal validity. They never go out of fashion. They are always relevant and should be observed under all circumstances. There is one sutra in the second chapter of Patanjali's Yoga Aphorisms. Ete means these five rules of Yama. Jati desha kala samaya anavachinnaha sarvabhuma mahavratam. Very nice shloka. Swamiji has commented on that one. Ete means these five rules of Yama, they have to be followed without regard to any other consideration. We can't give some, I'm in America, I have to give gifts. You don't have to do that. Whether in America or India or some other place, if something is unnecessary, then it should not be done. These unbroken, Swami writes, commenting on this aphorism, these unbroken by time, place, purpose, and caste rules are universal great vows. These are universal sarvabhoma mahavratam. Always and at all times and in all places under all circumstances, these rules have to be followed meticulously, unfailingly. Then Swamiji writes in Raja Yoga, these practices, non-killing, truthfulness, non-stealing, chastity and non-receiving, are to be practiced by every man, woman and child, by every soul, irrespective of nation, country or position. So they are Mahavrata. These five rules are of universal and eternal valid. They never go out of fashion. They are always appropriate in any place where we happen to be living. Then Swamiji explains why we should not do any bad deed in general. If I tell a lie, truthfulness is one of the disciplines. Swamiji writes, if I tell a lie, or cause another to tell one, or approve of another doing so, it is equally sinful. It is possible for us to convey false information by myself not telling anything false. Technically, I am free. I didn't tell any falsehood at all. But I can contrive the circumstances in such a way that truth, untruthfulness, false information can be conveyed to the person through somebody else or some other dubious way. So Patanjali says, any deed, good or bad, can be done in three ways. We can be participants in three ways in doing any deed. Kritam, karitam, anumoditam. Kritam means I can myself directly do something bad or good. Then of course I am doing, it's patent. I am the doer. I myself tell a lie or steal or do something. then I have nobody else to blame. Kritam, I myself, done by myself. Or if I am a little bit more clever in the worldly sense, I don't want to be the doer, but I'll ask somebody else to do it. I'll make it appear that he did that one. And I can plead innocence. People do like this. It's small things. This karitam, causing somebody to do something wrong, causing somebody to do something good is good. But especially when it comes to doing wrong things, if I make somebody else do it, incite somebody to do something wrong, and I myself remain free, that is also a sinful deed. Third thing is anumoditam, approval. Knowing that somebody is doing something wrong, and if I don't try to prevent that one or advise that person, say, this is not right what you are doing, then I become a participant in that deed, approver in that case. I become a participant in that deed. I know that he is doing something wrong, and I have the opportunity to explain that, guide that person, and if I don't do it, if I let him do it knowingly, then I'm also, to a large extent, a participant in that bad deed. Anumoditam. So Swamiji says, if I tell a lie, or cause another to tell one, or approve of another doing so, it is equally sinful. If it is a very mild lie, still it is a lie. Every vicious thought will rebound. Every thought of hatred which you may have thought in a cave even is stored up and will one day come back to you with tremendous power in the form of some misery here. Even if we do it unnoticed by anybody in secrecy, we can't escape. Every act that we do, big or small, leaves an indelible impression on our minds. We may not be aware of it. We may forget about it, but the impression remains. And it will come back to us and catch up with us. Good, 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 bad, bad, none escape the law. Swamiji wrote in the Sang of Sannyasi. So we should be very careful about what we do. If I'm doing it in my own room, nobody's watching it, nobody's noticing it, no, that will not happen. The mind will register it anyhow. No power can avert them. When once you have put them in motion, you will have to bear them. Remembering this will prevent you from doing wicked things. These are the five rules of Yama, basic rules. Now the next step is Niyama. These are spiritual disciplines, moral values and spiritual disciplines. This also has five items in it, five disciplines in it. Niyama consists of Shaucham, purity, Santosha, contentment, Tapaha, austerities, Swadhyaya, study of scriptures, Ishvara Pranidhanam, surrendering everything to the Lord, to whom everything naturally belongs. Claiming nothing as mine. What is mine? If you examine the notion of ownership, it is nothing like ownership. What do we own really? Nothing. But we are fond of claiming, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine. But if you pause and think, what is really mine? Not even the body is also mine. I call it my body, not my body. How much control do you have it? Nothing. So we have to practice these five disciplines of Niyama also. First one, Shaucha, purity. Purity has two aspects to it. Shaucha means Antashuchi, Bahya Shuchi. Inward purity, outward purity, external purity is easy to accomplish. We have so many modern ways of cleaning, vacuum cleaner and all kinds of detergents and everything. We have washing machine and drying machine, everything. So those things are easy to accomplish, external purity. But internal purity means purity of the mind, purity of speech, purity of thought, purity of action. That they also had to be practiced, external and internal. Internal purity by controlling lust, anger, greed, etc. And by practicing virtues. In the Patanjali's Yoga Aphorisms, first chapter, Patanjali has said how we should keep our mind in a well-balanced state. He gives some hints. Of course, it's not exhaustive, but he gives some hints. Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, Upekshanam, Sukha, Dukha, Punya, Apunya, Vishayanam, Bhavanatas, Chitta, Prasadam. Very nice, important aphorism in the first chapter of Yoga Sutras. He says, when you see a happy person, Sukha, Sukha means a person under good circumstances, having in good position, not going through any problem at that time, then what should be my reaction? Not jealousy, but happiness, friendliness with that person. If you have a lot of money and fame and succeed in something, I should not become jealous of you. I should become happy for you. That's why when you say, somebody says, I passed the bar exam or I passed the MCAT or something, you say, I'm happy for you. I got admission in Stanford or I got a promotion. Somebody says that, you should say, I'm happy for you. We should be genuinely happy for that person. Not be inward jealousy, keeping jealousy inside and say outwardly to please him, oh, I'm very happy for you, congratulations. But inwardly, these are all inward disciplines. Maitri, Sukha. If a person is unhappy circumstances, difficult circumstances, Dukkha. When we see such a person, then we should have compassion. Karuna. Maitri, Karuna. Friendship and compassion. Towards Sukha and Dukkha, people in good and bad conditions. Third instruction is Punyam. If you see a good person, virtuous person, then we should be happy for that person. We should admire that person. We should try to emulate that person. Fourth one, Apunya Vishayam. Apunya means bad people. Bad means, who are we to judge good or bad? Those who don't conform to certain norms of purity, etc., then we should not hate them. Most important thing, when you see somebody in good circumstances, not becoming jealous. When you see somebody in bad circumstances, doing bad deeds, we should not hate that person. No hatred. With hatred towards, with malice towards none, and charity towards all. That should be our aim. Instead of hating them, they are evil people. If you make close friendship with them, they will hurt you. Their company is harmful. Then we should say, stay at a distance. Upeksha means you don't have to be friendly. Stay at a distance, indifference. Narada Maharshi also says in this devotional aphorisms, Dusangaha sarvathaivatyajya. As much as it is necessary for us to cultivate holy company, company of devotees, good people, virtuous people, it is equally necessary for us to stay away from opposite kinds of people. Dusangaha, company of bad people, sarvathaiva tyajaha, by all means we have to avoid, prevent. That is the next instruction. Santosha, shaucha, santosha. Santosha means contentment, opposite of greed. Santosha can be misunderstood to mean complacency in regard to one's own efficiency, accomplishment, etc. But absence of greed for money, possessions, fame, one should not rationalize one's own poor performance as saying, I'm content, I'm satisfied. Patanjali has said, be content. If I'm not doing my work properly, supposing there is a student, a high school student or a middle school student, always getting C's and D's, and the parent says, hey, you have to get some A's also, some B's also, why can't you improve your grades? Then the boy says, the child says, Mom, Patanjali said you have to remain content. I'm content with my grades. So that is not contentment, that is complacency. If a child says that, there must be either a lack of motivation, maybe they call intelligent child, but not willing to work hard, that may be the cause for poor grades, or there may be some learning disability or some problem. We have to investigate. So that is not contentment. That is complacency. That is not what Patanjali says. In regard to our possessions, we should not be greedy. Absence of greed is contentment, santosha. Santosha dhanuttama sukhalabha, describing the benefit of practice of contentment, Patanjali says, if a person practices contentment, opposite of greed is contentment. Anuttama sukhalabha, enormous joy will come. Much more happiness will come than when you practice, when you have a lot of greed, ambition, drive, I want. No matter how much you have, still you are not happy. So want some more. Some years ago, I spoke on a Sunday. Some of you may remember, I spoke about Tolstoy's short story. How much land does a man need? There's a short story like that by Leo Tolstoy. That short story was in my high school textbook, English anthology textbook. That story, after 64 years of reading that one, I still remember, stuck in my mind. Everything else I read in high school, I've forgotten. And later in college, everything I have forgotten. But that has stuck in my mind. It made such a deep impression at that stage. How much land does a man need? That in a nice, dramatic, graphic way, there Tolstoy illustrates the damaging effect of greed. What greed can do? It can kill a person. That person was killed. The farmer was killed. He died seeking more land. He had much more land than he could ever use. But he was not satisfied. That drove him crazy until he, in quest of more land, he actually literally died on that spot. The story is very interesting. So greed can be can create enormous damage to our personality, and it is a poison in spiritual life. So saucha santosha tapas, three. Purity, contentment, and tapas, austerity. Austerity we did last time also. Austerity means severe austerity is like standing in water, lifting our heads and 12 hours doing some kind of strange meditation. That is not what is meant. Swami Brahmananda Rajamara said, any practice that conduces to purity of mind, control of lust, anger, etc., that can be considered as austerity. Last time we studied three kinds of austerity described by Sri Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita 17th chapter. Shariram tapaha, bodily austerities, vangmayam tapaha, speech austerities, manasam tapaha, mind austerities. Each of these has 5, total 15 items. These are described in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita in 3 verses. Verses 14, 15, 16 in chapter 17. 14th verse in chapter 17 describes 5 kinds of physical austerities. Deva, Dvija, Guru, Prajna, Pujanam, worshipping God, deities, and wise people and teachers. Shaucham, purity. Arjavam, straightforwardness. Keeping something in mind, saying something else, and doing a third thing, that's crookedness. Opposite of that, straightforwardness, harmony among the 3 instruments, mind, speech, and action. That is arjavam. Brahmacharyam ahim, brahmacharyam celibacy, ahimsa, non-injury. Shariram tapavachati. These are 5 things we have to practice. Then in regard to austerities of the speech, he also gives 5 more instructions. Anudvegakaram vakyam. Udvega means disturbance or excitement. Either in the hearer's mind or in the speaker's mind. If you use harsh words, if you use profanities, language that should not be used or heard, then it disturbs the mind, the speaker's mind and the listener's mind. So that should, harsh words also create pain in the listener's mind. So anudvegakaram vakyam, whatever I say, I should make sure that it does not cause any disturbance, embarrassment or pain to the person who listens to my speech. Satyam, it has to be true, what I say. Priyam, it must be pleasant. Hitam, it must be beneficial. Swadhyaya abhyasanam chaiva. Swadhyaya means study of scriptures, study of our own mind, introspection that we studied last time. These five are austerities of speech. Third one, 16th verse in the 17th chapter, manah prasadaha, calmness of mind. Mind must be kept always calm. Too much excitement, too much anger, or jealousy, or depression, all those disturbances we should reduce and try to eliminate. Mind must be calm. Then our life will be better, conducive to spiritual life. Too much excitement is not good. Manah prasadaha, saumyatvam, gentleness, not harshness. Maunam, maunam is, silence is a mental discipline. Not simply not speaking by mouth, that's not maunam, because someday, sometimes when you say I'm observing silence, we communicate in other ways. Body language and leaving notes on the refrigerator and desk and everywhere. They were communicating, but in a non-verbal way. That is not silence. Mauna means the mind must be calm from worldly, free from worldly thoughts. Atma vinigraha means self-control. Controlling the tendency of the mind and sense organs to roam about in the world of sense organs. That has to be controlled. Those five disciplines are disciplines of the mind. Tapaha. Then last of the five disciplines of niyama, Ishvara Pranidhanam. Ishvara Pranidhanam has been given two meanings in the Raja Yoga book. One meaning is Ishvara means God, any aspect of God. Worship of God. Swamiji says Ishvara Pranidhanam means worship of God. In any way, we'll talk about worship in much detail in the next instruction. Worship is a very big topic. That will be the next one when the next opportunity comes. Worship of God in some way, suitable way, appropriate way, or resignation to the will of God, submission to the will of God, surrender to the will of God. Surrendering everything, myself, my possessions, my actions, my speech, my thought, everything I have is all yours. I am also yours. That total surrender is a difficult discipline, but we have to practice it. Everything I have, everything I do, and myself are all His. I accept His will. Accepting God's will without complaining or resenting, that is surrender. That does not preclude self-effort. Whatever preventive measures, retaliatory measures we can take, we have to take. And afterwards, whatever remains, I accept it. This is His will. So be it. Without lamentation, without anxiety, without fear, without anger or bitterness. That is the last discipline, Ishvara Pranidhanam. And there is one aphorism in the Yoga Sutras. Patanjali gives this Ishvara Pranidhanam, surrender to the will of God, the highest priority, importance. He says, Ishvara Pranidhanadva. Only by practicing total surrender, sharanagati, to the will of God, we can achieve closeness to Him, oneness with Him. So these are the 10 disciplines, 5 of Yama, 5 of Niyama. Patanjali says these are very important disciplines. Swamiji emphasized these things. And these 10 disciplines we have to practice as the most basic fundamental disciplines if we want to succeed in any path of spiritual life. The next instruction, 6C, third part of 6th instruction is Nishthamat Pujane Nityam. Daily worship. Pujanam means worship. Nishtha means commitment or steadfastness in worshipping God. Now this is a big topic. Although it's one subdivision, one instruction, Sri Ramachandra's instruction to Sabari, a lot of material to be understood and studied in this heading of Matpujanam, worshipping God. How can we worship God? What is worship of God? We'll try to study when we get another opportunity. So there are different kinds of worship. Ritualistic worship, you will understand. Other kinds of worship, and who can do what, all those things. worship of God in man, as explained in the Bhagavatam, as Swamiji espoused, and doing all work as worship. These are all various aspects of worship. Worship does not mean only going to the temple and worshipping the image, granite image or a photograph or something, marble image, and call it worship. That is one kind of worship. Some time ago, Swami Atmagyananji gave a talk on this poem, The Living God, written by Swamiji. Swamiji wrote a poem, The Living God. And there, Swamiji says, serving our fellow beings is the highest kind of worship. Much superior to ritualistic worship when we offer all, chant all the mantras and offer coconut and flowers and elaborate food arrangements and decoration. That is one kind of worship. You do not put it down. But the highest kind of worship is serving the Lord by seeing His presence in all the beings, including animals and plants and trees and nature. If you neglect His presence and only worship in the idols, in the temple, that kind of worship is plenary, he says. So we'll study all of those things when the opportunity comes next time.